You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Monday! Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, I'm one of the hosts of this show, Tony East, covering the team for Forbes, the West Indianapolis Community News, and the Fieldhouse. That's a lot to say. On the line with me to talk about a team that has lost five out of the last seven games, the Indiana Pacers. Adam Friedman, my lovely co-host. Adam, where are you? How are you feeling right now about this basketball team?
I'm a little bit concerned.
Ooh, I don't know if I'm concerned or not, but I would hear concern at this point.
So my concern is the fact that for this team to win a playoff series, they probably need to have a home game for like the first for game seven, essentially, because if you look at the top six in the East, yes, right, last week, they're like a ridiculous home record. I just don't see them either upsetting a team twice on the road, which because
they're probably going to defeat it at home in a series, basically.
Yeah, or have to go undefeated at home.
You saw Daenerys' stat, I'm assuming, right? Like it was like a week and a half ago, and he said that the top whatever six.
Where we did it on our show, Tony. You and me talked about it on our show last week.
Oh, I remember seeing it from Chris Daenerys.
We had talked about it before Daenerys put it up, I'm pretty sure. But I could be wrong. I don't know.
I don't remember the order.
But we talked about it being like 87-15.
Yeah, the top six in the East or something. Wait, what did you just 87-15? Yeah, something
as of last week,
ridiculous. Kind of like 80% wins at home. And it's crazy. And yeah, but that's what makes these losses not good. And you're right to say that. It's like we'll look back at the end of the year and go, okay, even if the Pacers win 3 of 4 against the crappy Pistons and sweep the Hawks and the Hornets, like they would get, that's like five more wins already. You know, like these games matter. But yeah, 5 of 7 losses is interesting. And I was going to do a panic meter joking segment. I'm not panicked really, because I wanted to talk to you about correlation here and how much you think this is related. In the last seven games, that's since Milwaukee on the 22nd, I believe. Yes. Okay, good. I can count. Malcolm Brogdon played against Milwaukee and no one's beaten the Bucks. Don't care about that. In the other six games, he's played a total of 8 minutes. How much is that a factor in the 5 of 7 losses?
Well, I think the panic meter indicates that this team is going to be bad, or this team is heading in like a direction where they're not going to win more games and not make the playoffs. The panic meter is that they're slipping from that ability to be a top four seed, and that's where it gets concerning. And yes, especially with Brogdon, we don't know. I mean, it could be two, could be four, could be for all we know, two more weeks. I mean, two games, four games, or two more weeks for all we know. And it doesn't feel like this team is getting healthier first per se, right? So McConnell's hurt, Sumner's now hurt. I mean, we're talking about basically going on the roster, Nez Mitchell-Long, every guard you have on the team except for Aaron Holiday is basically hurt, and you call Jeremy Lamb at times. And so you go on that list, that affects them. And then you have the compounding fact that once you have all those guards hurt, you're playing who knows what these out of position spots. And I mean, maybe because they play like the Hornets, they can win a game, or they play the Bulls, and they got a couple bad.
They beat the Hawks, and they didn't do that.
But yeah, so I mean, after there's Orlando, who I think is maybe the worst team in the league, if not one of the bottom four. So I'm not sure they can beat anybody. And so it's concerning, certainly, because I'm not worried about this team. This team's going to end up with probably 45 wins minimum. Let's be real. Eventually, yep, They'll go on a run when they get everybody healthy, when Vic comes back and all that stuff, probably for sure. But the problem is that they need 50 wins or probably 53 wins to get even to like a 3 or 4 seed, which is kind of should be the goal, because being the 5 seed, like we saw the last 2 years, is good, but you need that 7th home game like they did against the Cavs last year. You need that ability to be able to win a playoff series. And if you're not, you don't have that, then you're basically back where you were 2 years ago, which the only way to take a step forward is by winning a playoff series, basically.
Yeah, it would be tough to not. And it's not a gap year because Vic's going to play, but like there was the understood, okay, this year might not be great, but then they started playing awesome. And so that got thrown out the window, and now playoff series wins are the goal. And that's why losing these games hurts so much. And like losing to Miami, not a big deal. I mean, they would have liked to have won that game, and we'll talk about rebounding later. But, you know, whatever. Miami's really good, even at home. Denver, same thing. Real good basketball team. Not a big deal. Pelicans are on fire. They look terrible in the standings. Since Derek Favors came back, they're like 6-3 or 7-3 or something nuts. The Hawks, though, whew. That's awful. And I think we saw against that Sixers team where the Pacers' second quarter was just ridiculous. And in this Hawks game where the first quarter was just ridiculous. Is, you know, you can't be on the bad side of these big runs. And I know that obviously Trey was unconscious. That's not going to happen all the time. But they just have to stop the bleeding for those runs and not let that kind of stuff happen, because big quarters have swung these games. And that just killed them. I mean, you cannot lose to the Hawks.
Yeah, I think the way they lost the Nuggets was certainly kind of frustrating. Maybe, you know, it wasn't like, oh, they lost the Nuggets, you know, the world's on fire. But it was frustrating because it felt like that was a game they should have had. I mean, with all the offensive rebounds they gave up, it was just
all ridiculous. All the long, yeah. Like, oh, man, just killer for your mental state offensive rebounds.
Yeah, and then I get Michael Porter is sort of now kind of.
What the hell was that? Remember how much we wanted him on this show?
Yeah, and I think we might have been unfortunate to get him right when he's maybe finally hitting his groove. I don't know. We'll see what happens in a couple of games, but he's going to play one of the Nuggets. So maybe we'll look back in a month and be like, oh, we were just the first game of the Michael Porter, you know, 20 points game show. Because that could be. I mean, he certainly is a fantastic talented, player.
Right.
I felt a little bit like he looked Durant-esque out there at times. I know he's similar body type.
Insane.
I mean, he just get around the rim and he could just make anything. It was ridiculous.
And he's so tall and smooth. Yeah, he was awesome.
But I think it's just the way they lose that's frustrating. I mean, even if they beat lost to the Hawks, they go 2-1 in the week. That'd be nice. It's just they start off the week so well with that Philly win. I know Embiid didn't play, so that kind of minimizes that win a little bit. But they just smoked.
Oh, they were up 36. They would have won that game if Embiid.
Yeah, I mean, they just played so well in that game, and it sort of they had that going into like the new year and everything, and then it just kind of fell off the next two games in a really just sad way. And to lose, I mean, the Nuggets especially because the rebounding should be their strength. They play big for a reason. Because I feel like they can bully you on the glass and they can make it work enough on offense to be kind of adequate enough, and it just didn't work. And then, you know, I saw some stats, and I think Caitlin Cooper was doing something like, well, it's on the guards, that's the rounds they're missing, but whatever it is,
it is totally is
sure. And it might, but like at some point it's like, why aren't, like, I don't know, it just felt like it got extremely frustrating to have two centers on the floor and get out rebound constantly. That's all.
Well, a lot of the long ones too. And I don't want to single out Jeremy Lamb because a lot of the guards didn't block out. But, like, Lamb has a habit of running under the basket. And you got to just box out your man. You know, we're saving this. So, anyway. Yeah, the rebounding was bad. And, you know, you deferred away, but I want to talk about it. Like, not having Brogdon is a huge factor. They for sure beat the Hawks if he plays. Like, no doubt in my mind. They're not playing Aaron Holiday the whole fourth quarter like they had to. McConnell wasn't even that great in that game. Like, just having size on Trey and Trey having to guard size is more than a 5-point swing. So, no doubt in my mind they win that game. They might have won the Denver game. I don't know. Aaron Holiday and McConnell played pretty well that game. And the Pelicans game, they were horrible. So, maybe they win the Miami game. So, they might have won three, but definitely two, I think, Miami and Atlanta, if he plays in this 5-game stretch. So, I think that is also a factor. But, I don't know how much.
That's a huge. I mean, that is the factor. That, I mean, he's their best player right now. Obviously, has played any game so far this season. He honestly, look at his raw numbers, and you know he's got the points per game and the assist numbers, but like his shooting splits are not that great. But it's just the fact that he provides that steadying presence on defense. He provides that kind of guard level rebounder. Right? What's he pulling in 4.5 rebounds per game?
That's a factor that's not discussed with rebounding. Is there missing
right? I'm pretty sure. So that's fourth on the team, right? So yeah. Which is incredible. Versus like Aaron Holiday, I think you go on the list, he's averaging 2 points per game, so that's half essentially. I mean, that's two extra rebounds per game when you have Malcolm Brogdon in the game, and he's the linchpin that keeps the whole thing going. And so, I mean, when you pull out that, you can survive a game or two. But they really haven't had to go right. I mean, we should have done this before the show, but I'm pretty sure their record without Brogdon has got to be like something like 2-8 or
they 9. They were 5-5 without him before the. Before the Hawks games, they're 5-6 without him now. I actually ran that a while ago. I know that to be true. So I have two Brogdon things. One is pre-finger injury. You know, we're going to talk about his shooting percentages a lot. You know, we say they're down, quote, unquote. Pre-finger injury, he was 47.3, 34.6, 93.2. So the three-pointer is probably down now that he's a ball handler, but that's 19 points a game, and that's still efficient. Post-finger injury, and obviously he's had some other injuries in there too. Post-finger injury, 37.5, 30, 93.5, 14.5 points a game. So clearly his shooting is down because of this finger injury. I know they're saying it's not, but I'm watching the games. I can tell you that he is missing more shots and his fingers hurt. I can't prove they're related, but I'm pretty confident they are. Anywho, I think those numbers come back up. To me, it's just this smart veteran guy who's good on D that helps them so much, even when his shot isn't falling, and that's why he's so important. And like I said earlier in the season, in the fourth quarter, like when the Pacers are up, it's a fun like chicken game to me. They just sit there and wait, let their lead go down ever so slightly because they know as soon as they put Brogdon in, they're the better team and they can hang on to win. So not having that is such a problem, and it really hurts them.
So weird question. Blessing in disguise that he gets his 2 weeks off because of his back injury for his finger?
Maybe. Yeah, no, I said that to someone on Twitter. They said, oh.
I mean, so the question is, did he need surgery? Like, usually with finger stuff, like, you need surgery, but it's minor, so you can put it off, right? So, like, I mean, what was it? Kobe won the NBA final with a broke pinky, right? And like, just attended that or something like that. Though he shot terrible for a lot of the playoffs.
If it was shooting hand, he probably would already have had some.
Or you know today, whether it was later to a football 5 minutes, but like Drew Brees broke his thumb and it never healed this year. He played a whole season with it, basically. Yeah. So I guess he missed five games, but it never fully healed.
So I think we're seeing the value of what Brogdon really has for this team, just even as a guiding, steady hand with the starters who can change the game in a pinch. Not that McConnell and Holiday can't change the game. You know, we've seen Holiday literally win them a game against the Raptors. We've seen McConnell on the bench win them tons of games. But in games where they're playing these really good teams, or when Trae Young is on fire, having that steady hand against the best of the best is very important.
Well, it takes an out-of-body experience for one of these guys to win a game without Brogdon. With the Brogdon, they kind of all can put up 18 points and win.
Yeah, right? That Raptors game was such a fun, fluky game.
Yeah, but it took Aaron Holiday doing
– And Miles. Miles
and Turner, same way. I mean, that's two guys playing out of their mind, right, to win. Occasionally, C.J. Warren, kind of same thing. But, it takes that to win a game versus when you – have him, you don't necessarily need that like out of body experience
to beat good teams, right? Exactly.
No, you can just sort of beat them with, you know, your.
So hopefully he'll be back versus Miami. I don't know how bad this back thing is. Last time he had the back thing, he missed three games. If you'll remember that, he got hurt in Houston. And this Charlotte game would be game number three. So,
yeah, I would imagine too going forward, just in a couple years, I'm assuming he's going to be load managed, right, in a way.
Yeah, especially when Vic is back and they are able to next – not this season, because I think they're going to try to load manage Vic this year, but next year.
But, I mean, and so we knew Barton was going to hurt because he just gets hurt every year, but, like, we all thought it was a foot thing, not a back thing, right?
The Bucks fans warned us of the foot, and the foot hasn't even been a problem yet.
No, it's just been back injuries, and it seems like maybe it just – I don't know.
Just three for back before, three for back now, and then – the three for the hamstring, which I'm assuming is probably related to the back.
Yeah, and then
the one finger game.
Yeah, where he got splinted probably.
Yeah.
They barely beat the Knicks with some amazing, amazing luck at the free throw line.
That was – what a ridiculous defensive performance. Okay, well, that went longer than we thought. So things are bleak at the moment. I think they can get this right on track, though. Just need to bank a few wins this week, which they can do. We're going to take a little break and then do a happy TJ Warren thing, talk about Aaron Holiday's fourth quarter against the Hawks, oof, and some offensive rebounding stuff, so stick around. So that was a sad segment that's probably not really indicative of how this team's playing. They're playing better than losing five of their last seven, and the reason for that is a guy that they got a second-round pick for taking his apparently bad contract, TJ Warren.
Yeah, so I said this before the show started, but he is one streaky motherfucker. I thought I'd cuss.
We're not supposed to cuss, but it's just better, man. It's just
he's so. I mean, so one he at one point his 3-point percentage was like below 30%. Then it got up to like 40. Then it went back down to 30. I mean, now it's at like 38. He's a 50, basically a 50%, 38 from three kind of guy. I mean, he's
all right. What do you think he is as a guy? Say it.
A streaky motherfucker.
No. Like his stat, like his percentage line.
Oh, you mean from
just off the cuff?
Oh, right. I mean, I have it in front of me. Do you want me to read it again?
Well, that's what he was in December. He was a 50.8, 35.7, 85.7
guess. Okay. You know? Okay, that makes sense. So
it's just the highs and the lows. And in these seven games, he's been really good that they've been losing. And sometimes I want him to get the ball more. Like, he shouldn't get the ball more. I get why he should not get the ball more. But he just always, it feels like to me, either gets a shot at the rim, a spot up three, or an open mid-range look that he is capable of hitting. And he's one of the few guys that everyone is going, like, even as fans and analytics people, like, yeah, you can shoot that, you're going to make it. So I like when he gets the ball. I think he does good things, even though a few of them feel forced. It's just usually a good shot.
So how many times do you think he shot above 70% in a game?
This season?
Yeah, this season.
10?
Oh no, you went way high. I counted five.
Four, that's it. Ew.
Four or five.
I guess 60 is still a good remark. He's
you do 60, I think you get to like 15.
He's 10 at over six at 60 or more.
Okay, 10 is because I mean 70 or more is ridiculous. I mean that's for a shooting for a small forward. I mean we're not talking Sabonis who's just sitting close the entire time and getting you know the back guys in. This is a guy who's like making shots from the 8 to 15 foot range, the hardest place to make shots essentially in the game, the most inefficient shot, and making them at like. Something for, you know, every third beam out of 6 of 10 rate, essentially.
He's at he's at 8 games above 60% and 8 games below 40%. That's funny.
I mean, he's the only player. He might be one of the only players in the league outside of like one of the top like 5 or 10 offensive players at like kind of like the Durant level guys who can make a 15-foot shot efficiently enough to be worth taking it over 3-point shot attempts.
Yeah, his three's good enough that you live with it. But he doesn't take pull threes; he takes spot up threes, right? He can't create those himself.
No, but he can create the 15-foot shot.
He can, yeah, he's gonna
almost it's more efficient than the 3-point shot attempt.
That 15-footer, he can, and he just skates around the screen, takes one dribble in, the defender backs off because they want him to take it, and he's like, okay, and then he hits it.
And he's become a good enough corner 3-point shooter where he definitely has to be. You know, I think there was it the Philly game where they kind of lagged off him a little bit. And he just hit his first two, and that kind of set the tone.
Yeah, he was amazing. Both Philly games, he's been amazing. They have not really had an answer for him, which is surprising.
Yeah, I think teams want to live with him at that line, but then if he gets them flying out to him, he's able to kind of pump fake and drive and get, you know, his efficient shot, basically.
41.7% from the corners, and 49.2% of his threes are from the corners.
Yeah.
I guess, will do.
and to me, and I know he hasn't been a great defensive player, but he looks like he's trying on defense.
Better than last year for him.
He's putting it, there's an effort level there that feels – you feel comfortable with him out there in clutch times, I guess.
He's been a better defender than Lamb this year, which is not something I thought I would say.
And they've asked him to do a lot. I mean, they put him on the best guy a lot of times,
too. He has been very good this year. And I know he's inconsistent, like you're saying, but, like, you still have a guy that you can trust to get you. Even, you know, I kind of liked him in the summer because, like I always say, if the set breaks down, they can just throw it to this guy to get a bucket. But in the season, they even, like, you don't even have to do that. You can throw it to him at the start of the possession. And it's like – he can run a set a little bit. He can do a pick and roll. He's never going to pass it, but he'll get a good shot up. Like he's just very useful.
Yeah, his worst problem right now is that he plays to a player who's so similar to him that it kind of sometimes hurts him.
He can't pass at all. Well, he just does not pass.
No, but he also plays next to a guy like Jeremy Lin who kind of is the same player he is. So he kind of operates in the same space. So it becomes kind of odd at times.
And they space fine. I mean, Lamb's hitting threes and stuff.
No, they space fine, but I mean, it becomes sort of this weird thing of like your turn, my turn, versus like when he is next to Vic, it's going to be a little different because Vic's much more of a
passing guy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's willing.
Yeah, I wish one of those two would pass a little bit better.
Yeah, but the thing is,
Warren had that 6 assist game.
I mean, I don't know what Warren did with passing. I don't know if he just doesn't look up, if he doesn't want to. I mean, there are times, especially where it feels like he is just like frustrated, he hasn't got the ball in a lot of positions and takes a shot whatever he can find at times. But he makes, I mean, overall, you live with that because he's played every game this year, so he's the only guy who's done that.
What the? How is he the guy? Like,
you know, we're all summer, and he puts up 18 a game. I mean, that's
how, like, yeah, but like all summer, we're like, oh, this guy's never played more than 66 games. Like, injury prone TJ Warren. Nope.
To me, it feels like, too, he's going to be one of those guys, like, we're going to have one playoff game where he's going to have, like, 35 win the game, and it's going to be just like, oh, TJ Warren. Like, kind of one of the Bojan games from that 1 year. He's just going to have one of those.
I actually totally think that's going to happen.
So, I mean, I know this is weird, but do you think he's better than Bojan was last year? I don't want to –
I think he's a better offensive play. I think – nah, no, let me back up. I think he's a better inside-the-arc scorer than Bojan, but Bojan's threes make them about equal in total impact to me.
Okay, if I told you could have Jeremy Lamb and him for Bojan's basically salary, is that worth
it? Yeah, absolutely, you do that.
Okay, just making
sure. They made out well there.
Yes, right? Because the combined, Lamb and Warren made like 21. I think Bogey makes 18, so it's around
that. They made out well there, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it worked out. Okay, so let's pivot here. And a lot of hat tipping to Kalen Cooper for writing good stuff about this, but the offensive rebounding, Adam, is not looking great right now.
No, it is. It was miserable.
They are last in the – so some of – they're not actually like – what I read from Caitlin's thing is like they're last at rebounding threes. And that is – you know, I talked to Sabonis after that Nuggets game. A lot of people were there. This was not just us. Media was talking to Sabonis after the Nuggets game, and he said that they – like I said with Lamb, they had this habit where they just fly into the rim on shots, even threes. And that's why these long rebounds, is they just fly off the rim on these threes and they're not in good position. And another factor here that is, you know, they actually had better rebounding. They didn't have better rebounding splits with Turner this month for the first month this season. They did in November. So for once, it's not that Turner's out there. It's a different thing is for him, he is running out in transition more. So they're counting a lot more on Sabonis alone to grab defensive rebounds. And you can see that in his defensive rebounding rate stats. He's getting about the same amount when Turner is on and off the floor. But at the same time, when they have fewer guys crashing the glass, they're giving up more rebounds. So there's it's just something's just not working because it's killing them. It's made them lose two games.
Yeah, and giving up the long rebound way too much. I mean, whether it's because Warren Lambert is trying to automatically get down the rim before the shot's taken or after, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The offense too fast at times. Because there are times when they get the especially when Brogdon or McConnell gets a long rebound where they just immediately outlet pass it down to like Warren or Lamb because they're already cutting. But that also could have bite you in the ass basically if you do that and then, you know, you have some, I'm thinking a Will Barton type guy just crashing and catching it and draining a three over your head essentially.
Yeah, and you know, it's weird because they have two centers, but you can't even blame them hardly, right? Like on rim misses and short, this is from Caitlin's article again. A rim misses and short mid-range misses, they are seventh in each category and rebounding percentage on defense. Like they get the shots that don't go flying everywhere, but the farther out the shot gets, the worse the rebounding gets because their guards just are in bad position and they have these principles ingrained in them for some reason that aren't right. They're not boxing out and they need to.
Yeah, I mean, so this kind of compares to like, so I think Miles Turner gets often blamed way too much for like
he's not a good rebounder. He's not a good rebounder, so he gets this blame, but this is not on him.
No. So a lot of times he gets blamed for like the center scoring, right? So like if Dwight Howard had a 10 of 10 game, right? For example, but if you watch most of the plays, Turner gets screwed on his defender because a guy gets beat in the perimeter. He goes to guard him, and then the other guy just slizzes it around. And
absolutely.
Gets right? Absolutely. So it's not really Turner's fault at that moment. And it's the same
with no, Adam. He is the worst defensive center in the league.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But like it's the same thing with rebounds at times, right? So if you have Turner out on the perimeter, and he's guarding a guy in the corner, and then the defender draws Sabonis basically out of the play in a way, like, you know, it's a driving kick or whatnot, then you're kind of in this weird position where you need your guard to step up, and that's just not happening. And that's just the difference.
Right. Right. And that's kind of easy to clean up, but it's such a habit, you know? That's why I think it's probably
it's harder when you have a constantly switching out starting lineup, which it's not constantly, but it's basically Aaron Holiday kind of coming in every four or five games.
Yeah, they only had the constant switching early. Now that's over.
Yeah, I guess really it's right. But I would say the bench mentioned that great at either time. So I mean it falls, you know, that's been constantly moving over the past five or six games, basically with Goga sometimes in and sometimes now.
Right.
With
so Sumner back, Goga doesn't play, so no worries.
So I mean, and I don't know if maybe that's what it is, or simply it's probably just because, you know, you have an inexperienced player Aaron Holiday, you have a guy in Lamb and Warren who aren't great rebounders, and then it kind of leaves in this weird position, honestly.
Yep, it sure does. And I think they'll clean this up. They had that. Did you see the rebounding grim in the Hawks game that they showed?
I did not see the
graphic. Fox Sports Indiana broadcast. First of all, I'd like to hat tip to Jeremiah Johnson for literally getting a haircut during the game. That was fantastic. But anyway,
gotta be honest. So I had two screens up. I had the NFL game on one and the Pacers on the other. So if it was not actually the Pacers game, I was not probably watching.
Jeremiah Johnson had the report that they had like to have a rebounding focused practice. They put this little like tiny metal thing that was in the middle of the rim, so even shots that would normally go in would like bounce off a rim.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I wish I took a picture of it. So yeah, they worked on it in practice before the Hawks. Yeah, and the rebounding wasn't terrible against the Hawks. They just lost.
Well, and here's the thing too. It's good to get exposed like this in January and not in April.
In fact, the Hawks only had four offensive rebounds the whole game.
Yeah, but that's the Hawks. What's which?
Yeah, they have terrible. And Trae Young made every shot he took in the first.
The Heat this week will be the test.
The Heat will absolutely be the test.
But I mean, it is good to be exposed now because. Yes, you can fix it. You can work on it versus, you know, if a team exposes you in April, you're basically.
If Al Horford shuts down your entire bench offense in April, you're screwed.
Well, it's why the Sabonis Turner pairing right needed this whole year, because last year they kind of just threw together in the playoffs and teams figured out, oh, we can do this one thing to exploit it. Well, now this is one of the flaws of the Sabonis Turner thing, right? Is that Turner's on the perimeter guarding and then you got Sabonis pulled from the rim, pushed out of the play. Who's in the rebound? Well, that's something they can fix now. And so that's why we need to see them play together, and when we were probably since last year's, because then you can figure out what are the weaknesses, what are the strengths, and can you cover up weaknesses enough to be worth playing together because they're two really good players and you got to, you know, make it work, I guess.
Do you think we have time to talk about Aaron Holiday's fourth quarter?
Yeah, it was crap. How about that?
It was the worst quarter I think he's had in his career, and it stands out to me so much that we're doing a little brief thing about it, which seems unfair because he's a young guy and you need him to play through these kind of things. Great, no problem. It just lost in the game.
I think that might be his worst game of the year because it's the most when it mattered the most. Right? He's had bad games that haven't mattered like this. But this was just one where he was just like he had to play well and step up, and he was just
terrible. Yeah, missing the layup at the end was like the perfect epitome of that whole quarter. And it kind of felt like the Aaron Holiday of old that we have been critical of, who shoots when he shouldn't be.
Yeah.
He's got over that for a while, and then he came back to that this quarter.
So I think we noticed, honestly, in the Heat game, when he didn't make the pass to McDermott, or just kind of knew he was going to – I think from the start of that Heat play, what he was going to make, he was going to shoot the ball. I think he knew it. I think he was – you know, they drip a play, he's just going to ignore it. And that's where I get kind of concerned with him, because I certainly think he can be a really good player. But I there's something about being able to fit into a system, especially when you're this young, that is kind of important. I think that's why McMillan, honestly, maybe was hesitant to play him for a while, because I don't think he thought he would kind of fix, you know, do the little things right, you know, pass the ball when needed to be passed and rebound, all these little extra things that it takes to kind of work your way up in the league, especially when you're a young guy. You know, he doesn't come as a top five pick, so he doesn't get to have that. And this is a good team, and he has to kind of do the little things that this team needs to be done. And so I think we see this at times, but he's able to cover it up a lot of times, because he's able to, you know, in the Toronto game to shoot, what, you know, 4-for-4 at the end of the game, make a huge three. And then, you know, his kind of terrible play to that point gets kind of overshadowed by this, by that kind of good play at the end. But I've started to see something where it feels like he's reverting back to his old ways, especially when he's not making his shots and he just kind of doubles down on it instead of trying to figure out, okay, I'm not on tonight. How do I get Sabonis in the action every time?
I'm not on, and Sabonis is on, and Sabonis had the third most shots of anyone on the team in the quarter.
It feels like he's being almost too selfish at times, I guess. Might be the right way.
He's had that problem before. Understood.
That's what makes a player great, ultimately, right? Is when they learn
that. This is how you've played your whole life. You've finally showed this year that you can find that balance. And when you're selfish, you've proven you can win games in the clutch. I understand why you're doing it. It's just you have to figure out when to stop doing it. And he didn't at all.
Yeah, and I think this is what separates good players from great players, or kind of the great role players, is that you learn when you're not playing well how you can still contribute to the team in a way that helps you win. And he hasn't quite figured that out yet. It's a young thing, and it almost might take, you know, a brother of his to sit him down and tell him, you know, a brother who's a really good role player and kind of knows his role when he's not shooting well, not playing well, either how to play through it or how to kind of give it, you know, up when it needs to, or uses, you know.
A brother who played a great 7 minutes in the fourth quarter.
Well, and a brother who is a very streaky three-point shooter, certainly at times. He'll have 0-5 all the time. But we'll figure out when he's not shooting well that he can, you know, still stretch the floor and still make the right pass to get other guys scoring. Right? To get, you know, find McDermott on the cut for the, you know, the easy bucket and stuff like that, you know. And so hopefully he will get those lessons from that brother.
The learning experience in general, having these kind of things.
And again, it's good to happen in January and not in April.
Sucks to lose. Yes. They definitely don't lose if he's better in the fourth, but it is what it is.
No, and they're still alive, I think, for a top four seed. The three is getting kind of farther away.
Lakers have lost four in a row.
Yeah, I'm talking about the top four, the Toronto seed.
Oh, yeah. Hey, the Sixers are in top four.
You want to be a
four seed. I forgot that the Sixers are in top four.
Yes.
How dare I?
I mean, so the three seed is getting a little bit away from them. I feel like maybe Boston or Miami might come back to earth a little bit second half. I don't know. But it feels like they can still get to that four seed pretty easily, especially because they played Toronto a bunch.
They got it. Just keep the Raptors close when Vic comes back.
Yep.
Yeah, they're a full eight games clear of not making the playoffs, which is good. All right. Speaking of not the team on the outside of the playoffs, Hornets at 9, Bulls at 10, both coming this week. Let's look ahead at the coming week of games. So a tidy little losing run here, Adam, has me in the preseason predictions lead. I'm up to 20 correct, and you are at 19. Ha! God. I would like
This will write itself, because I'll win more games than 43.
We have the same result chosen every game up until Philly coming up. So they open this week with Charlotte, who they should be 2-0 against. They played them the first time without Turner and Sabonis, and they still should have won and did not. What do you think about the Hornets? They smoked them the second time they played.
I think they should beat the Hornets even without Brogdon. That's what I think.
They almost did beat the Hornets without Brogdon once.
No, he
– Did he not play that first time?
No, he did. He did.
He did?
It was like one of the one – it was him, Warren, and Lamb carrying it with like Jakar Stenson, and I don't forget who else who started. Let me look at it real fast.
That is correct. The second time they played, when the Pacers were fully healthy, it was a 107-85 just blowout. Pacers defense looked great. Devontae Graham, the offense for the Hornets, if you'll recall, was 3-for-18. Fantastic defense by Brogdon. See, this is the type of stuff you need him for. So the thing that's been killing the Pacers on this Hornets team is, shocker, offensive rebounding. That's letting Biombo and Cody Zeller do well, and I think that's going to be a key focus here.
Yeah, I think that, and I think it'll be interesting to see if, assuming Holiday starts, how the young point guards go toe-to-toe.
Yeah, Graham's been awesome. He has had so many fun game winners.
He is the lone bright spot in my just garbage fantasy. just garbage this year, just so everybody knows. I think I'm the worst team in my league.
So they are 30th in pace. That surprises me, given the amount of youth they have on the roster.
I mean, they're just not a good team. I mean, they're okay. They're okay for the East.
So, okay, you know, Basketball Reference? Let me phrase this. So Basketball Reference tracks point differential to give you your expected win-loss, right? Most teams are within one of their actual record. But the Hornets, with 15 wins, have an expected win-loss of 11-27. So they win a ton of close games.
Well, that indie game is probably one of the
shutdowns. Yeah, including the Pacers, and then just get smoked when they lose. So I think setting the tone early is another key thing here, because they don't have any like comeback kind of grit in them if it's not a close game in the fourth, although we did see when they did beat the Pacers, they came back big. But you know, just get ahead and keep this team down, because they were terrible the second time they played. They just didn't have any offense. So I don't think it's too hard to kick this team while they're down and get a win.
Yeah, I think this is a huge comeback opportunity for the Pacers. You know, they've reeling two losses. They've lost, like you said, five of the last seven. They lost to two teams who have okay, iffy records in New Orleans and obviously in Atlanta. So this is a chance to kind of, you know, steady the ship a tiny bit, because if they lose this game, it's going to feel like they're going to start free falling.
Alarms, yeah. That's their fourth in offensive rebounding. That's the only key stat that they're top 10 in the league. So. Big test for their new rebounding focus.
This will be a Bismack Biyombo game for sure.
It will be. He's been pretty good against the Pacers this year. Is he your butcher by chance?
No, Devontae Graham by far.
Yeah, damn. I shouldn't have lobbied that.
I mean, come on, Devontae Graham's putting up 19 points a game. I mean, he's the guy.
Devontae Graham is hitting nearly 40% of his 10 threes a game.
Yeah, he's
over 10 points a game on just threes.
This guy is basically like where Kemba was at this age, I would say.
Yeah, he is. Where did this come from? And he's so bad inside the arc, but his three-point ball is so lethal that he's good.
It's the rise of the four-year guards, man. Between him, Brogdon, or somebody else who's killing it recently, too.
Is there another one? Chris Dunn's defense. He was a four-year
guard. I guess Aaron Holiday, he's a three-year guard. I'm trying to think. There was somebody else, but maybe I'm blanking on
it. Was there someone else?
Matisse Thybulle, didn't he go all 4 years?
I don't know if he went all 4 years, but he's been awesome for the Sixers. Yeah, run Graham off the line is key, though. He cannot do anything once he is broken down.
Yeah, like I said, it'll be interesting to see the
air. Someone replied to me on Twitter about these lip noise things I do, and I got to stop. Sorry, I just realized I did one.
What were you doing? I don't know.
I click in between thoughts. Sorry, person who noticed.
You do it sometimes. I noticed that.
I know. I got to stop. Cody Zeller is mine. That's so random, isn't it?
Three
offensive rebounds a game from Cody Zeller.
Okay. I mean, you are an IU guy.
I feel like I just did it again.
It's okay, Tony. Ignore the people.
Yeah, Zeller, he's not particularly awesome at like many basketball things. You know, he's only scoring 12 points a game, and all of it comes from like 4 feet away. He's not particularly good at D, but he can rebound pretty well. And that's been the case for him since high school, even. And I think we saw that last couple times these teams have played. If he gets, you know, four or five offensive rebounds, this game might be tight. If they can keep him off the glass, great.
I think it's going to be closer than we like, for sure.
Yeah, me too.
I think they'll be
a deflated team on the road.
Yeah, I think they'll be able to pull it out at the end. But, of course, they do have trouble winning in New Orleans. Not New Orleans, Charlotte.
Thank you.
I did the wrong Hornet team.
If we're talking about Charlotte and struggles, we got to mention the Dan Burke game from last year.
Yeah, that was last year.
2 years ago, right? No, it was last year.
I don't remember.
Either way. The dumbest thing that's ever happened on this podcast. Ultimately, it was
the most wrong we've ever been.
Easily. Ultimately, I think you're at about a closer game, and I think it's be kind of a slog of a game given how these teams play. I'm going to go 95-91 win, and people will say, "Win an ugly is still a win," and you'll move on.
Yeah, I'm thinking a low game in the low hundreds. I don't think it'll be that low scoring.
You know what that means, Adam? Do you hear this, people who like to bet? Because me and Adam both expect low hundreds, low 90s. This game's going to end up 130-125 Hornets.
Yes, yeah, so maybe even in the 140s.
Yeah, they did it last year. All right, the good team they play this week, an important game because the Heat are still the only elusive team in the 2-6 range of the East. The Pacers have not beaten yet. I did it again, Adam. This is brutal. The Heat. The Heat are great. The Heat are 12th in offense, 10th in defense. They're really good in the clutch thanks to a variety of good guys. But like we saw in Miami, that was by far the most fun Pacers game of the year to me. But like we saw in Miami, this team can get to the line. They hit their threes. They're a pretty good defensive team. They just have solid weapons to do a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, they're really good. I mean, what else? I don't know what to say. To me, they've been playing like a team that certainly can win the East right now.
They're good. They're real good.
Then make a move for somebody to just get a little bit better at the point guard spot. They're tough to beat at home, which is like the recipe to win.
This is in Indiana.
No, I know, but just
general. Right.
I know it's in Indiana. No, that's what I was saying. It's just as a team to win the East, they feel like they're one of the few teams that maybe could knock off Milwaukee because, too, they have Butler who could kind of have a Kawhi-esque playoff run in a way, too. Maybe I'm being too generous to him, but I feel
he is good.
He has that ability. But it does feel like, at least if it's at home and if Brogdon plays, there is some equalization there to what happened last time, and they have a shot. I mean, they play Miami tough, I guess to me, I don't really know what to make of it at Brogdon because we don't know what happened to Brogdon, basically, I think is the right way to put this.
Yeah. Without Brogdon in Miami, they played him. I mean, they were winning with whatever, 10 seconds left. They can play this team well. They actually match up well with the Heat. The Pacers do, which is good if it's potentially a playoff series. Just because, they're kind of balanced and have weapons everywhere, but outside of Butler, even Butler to an extent. With his outside shot, but all of them have some little weakness here and there you can pick on. So I think they can win this game, and they just have to find the right matchups to exploit to get it done.
Yeah, I also think being in Indiana, Butler won't get, the 16 foul shots he got or something?
Yeah.
I'm trying to fill that up real fast.
I have it in front of me. Yeah.
Butler took 15 free throws. He shot 3 of 11. He was just not that good.
No. They got to guard Duncan Robinson better from deep, too.
He got every little call he wanted the entire game. I mean, it could go in. I think there was one ridiculous play where he went in the rim and backed into Turner and got Turner called for the foul, even though he made the contact, initiated it completely. I thought it was a pretty garbage call. I mean, I feel like this happens a lot, but I thought it was a pretty egregiously called game. Of course, Pacers should have still won it, but.
They should have won it. You know, we didn't pick X Factors against the Hornets.
Yeah, that's because the Hornets suck and they're. And we only spend 3 hours.
Well, I have one for the Heat game and I want to do it first. Mine is Domantas Sabonis. One, because they need to do better rebounding than they did last time against the Heat. I mean, that was killer. The Heat had 14 offensive rebounds, if you recall, 56 overall. The Pacers had 34 rebounds overall. That is unacceptably a huge difference, especially in one point game. Also, though, Sabonis was 4 of 11, and if he shoots a little bit better, and he's not even – I mean, I guess he's guarded by Bam, but Bam isn't there on defense to the level where you think he can get Sabonis to shoot that poorly. If Sabonis has a little bit better of a game here, that would go a long way.
Yeah, I think that's a fair – I mean, we there's a couple games against some big teams where Sabonis had played just like the Philly game a while back too, not the most recent one. If he played just slightly better, they would have won, so – I think it's a fair X factor. I mean, I think the X factor again goes to the bench. They
did very well last time.
They did very well, and I think they'll have to continue to do very well to kind of help them. Pacers kind of either come back from a deficit, especially Barker's not playing and whatnot, or have to extend some leads or maintain leads, I guess, in a way. But we'll see with McConnell. I'm assuming McConnell will be healthy by Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, he's already trending towards playing, it sounds like, for Monday.
Yeah, he's kind of got to play through a lot of stuff because that's kind of his calling. Playing a lot of games. Yeah, well, he's the kind of guy who's only in the league because he's like kind of a nuisance and hard worker, right? That's kind of what kept him in the league because he doesn't have the natural gifts that most people have. So,
do you have a non-Jimmy Butler division or can I pick Jimmy Butler?
Sure, you can pick Butler. I'll pick Bam.
Hey, Jimmy Butler can get to the rim and get fouls and can score pretty much any non-3-point shot on the court. So, yeah, he's pretty good. He's the X factor. Slow him down. If they hold the 20 points again, I bet they win.
You think so? I think you might have more like 25. I think this 20 is soft.
That's what I mean. If they hold him to 20, I think.
Oh, hold. I thought you said if he had 20. Sorry, I heard you wrong.
No. If they hold him to 20 again, I think they win.
I think that's fair. I mean, if Aaron Holiday looks around and makes a pass, I think they win that game.
Yeah, right.
If he doesn't try to just be.
You could pick anyone on the Heat outside of Myers Leonard who plays, and I'd be like, yeah, you know what? That's a good pick.
So I think Bam.
Bam's good. Bam is so good.
So I think in the recent weeks, he separated himself from Sabonis for the All-Star game, in my opinion. I know.
Yeah, they probably might both make it.
Yeah, I think Brogdon's probably on the outside right now, actually.
Definitely. All these missed games have him on the outside for sure.
Yeah. And maybe they both make it. So maybe I'm wrong. But it feels like he's shooting like 57%, which is a crazy number. I mean, it's 15 and 10, obviously. I know Sabonis has got a 17 and 13, but his shooting isn't as good as that. And it feels like Bam's defense is like
pretty good.
It's just better than Sabonis by like far. I mean,
he had 18, 15, and 6 in the Pacers Heat game. Like, he's just good at everything.
Well, he can't shoot the three. That's different.
No, that's true. No, but elbows. Okay, elbows and in. He's good at everything.
Can I tell you? I feel like Bam is, and maybe because he's on three. But if you merge Turner's Sabonis, the Bam might be the guy you get.
I think you get a little better than Bam.
I think you probably get a better 3-point shooter, and that's the difference. But like, he's as close as you're gonna get if you
merge. A little better than Bam.
Yeah, I think a little better. I think you're right. But like, if you were looking for the ideal, like you know, we talked about it, they were one player. I think you get pretty close to a Bam Adebayo type player if
you merge the two. You get like somewhere between Bam and Jokic.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
I think that's close. Yeah, Bam is very good. I think the Pacers lose this game, though. I don't know why. I think the Heat have their number. They keep developing these guys that they, you know, find in their talent evaluation into very useful contributors, and they can beat you in so many ways that I think it's going to be hard for the Pacers to win this one.
I will tell you what, though. I think it's been bad. I think they're going to lose, but I really don't. But I think we'll know in the first quarter whether they can bring it or not. And if the game is like, you know, there was that game with Miami last year or 2 years ago, maybe, where they shot 0 of 18 from three or something stupid.
I remember that. Right? That was awesome.
So I think we'll know whether they have enough to beat them in the first quarter. Like, we'll know whether the team, you know, you can kind of tell based on if they have it that night or not. I mean, against a bad team, they should get it going in the second half enough, but against good teams, right, they often can't. But I think we'll know if they brought their A game that night. Because I think for a while, I felt like, too, the Pacers were bringing their A game against the Torontos, the Bostons, the Phillies, because they were so under, you know, appreciated. Probably felt like around the league, they had to kind of like say, oh, you know, this team, you know, we're here. We're going to be the 6 seed, but we're as good as you. We're good as good as Boston. We're as good as these teams. You should talk about us. And I think that kind of is worn off as they beat all these teams, right? It's less like, can we beat them? It's more like, we should beat them. And I think that can also work against you sometimes, because then you kind of become complacent in a way, and it becomes, you think you can bring it every night and you can't, and so on. So I think we'll know in the first quarter whether this team can win, but I don't think they do.
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't either. But you said that you can bring in the second half against bad teams. Speaking of bad teams, their last game this week is against the Chicago Bulls, who actually have a very good defense. I do not want to discredit the Bulls. Their defense is sixth in the league. Can you leave that? Their offense sucks, and they rely a lot on Zach LaVine to score them lots of points. So,
can I tell you a crazy stat real fast?
I love crazy stats.
It's probably not that crazy, but did you know the Pacers are 3-6 in the division, which is like the worst of any of the best?
That's 20. What happens when you somehow drop 3 of 4 to the crappy Pistons, and yes, you lost the Cavs. Like, they just, yeah.
So this Bulls, what I was going to say, is beating the Bulls their opportunity to reinvigorate that record, yeah, to at least a 500 level at some point this year.
Man, the Cavs, add that to the list earlier. We're going to look at their record at the end of the year and go,
they lost to a lot of bad teams this year.
They'd be this seed if they beat them. It's so ridiculous. Anywho, yeah, Markkanen has been pretty bad for them, and he's hurt. He left the game actually yesterday for them with an ankle injury. No word on how long he's out. Otto Porter's been out for forever for them. So they're a little bit banged up, but less marketing means they get more of Wendell Carter, who's been really good on D for them. And Zach LaVine, obviously, has been awesome. The Pacers tweeted the video of this week, like it was a year ago, 2 days ago, when Vic versus LaVine happened in Chicago. That was an insanely good game. So they have some good stuff going on. We all know how great Thad is at what he does, but they still have some young guys who are learning. So they're still mostly not good, but they're okay. Their defense is pretty good.
Yeah, one that shot. Oh my God, that New Year's. That
what game, a game!
It was just amazing. I mean, Vic hitting that three. I mean,
banking.
At some day in like 5 or 10 years, we'll have to like mark down all his game winning shots.
That'd be fun.
I mean, just because between, I mean, from the Boston shot to the San Antonio shot, and I mean, It's just amazing how many hots he's put up in
the Nuggets, the Bulls.
He's played, what, 100, let's say 10 game with the Pacers in his career, and he's put up probably 7 game winners in that at least.
Yeah, like I think it's like 5, but that's still a lot.
Well, I don't know. I guess maybe game winners are overtime centers, right?
Right, so that, okay.
Yeah. When he played the Nuggets the first time that where he sent the game to overtime.
Right.
That one. And I know it's going to sell, but like the contrast to Paul George's first whatever how many years where he didn't hit any game winner for the Pacers. Now, granted, he was winning games by so much it didn't matter because he was on really good teams, but it was crazy to see the difference in that in those first 100 games or so.
Right. So the Bulls have a lot of guys who are bad shot makers. That's why their offense is so low. They play Kobe White a ton of minutes. He's shooting under 37%. Chris Dunn shooting 42%. Markkanen, when he plays, 41%. They just don't have a lot of efficient scorers, and that is why they rank last in the league in field goal percentage. Most of that is bad two-point shooting. So if the Pacers can just stick to their normal defensive know-how, they've been pretty good on that end of the floor this year. I think they'll be able to pull this one out because outside of LaVine, they don't have a lot of good and even LaVine doesn't really pass. You know, they're kind of limited on shot creation for other guys. Satoransky's pretty good, but that's why their offense is kind of limited because they have a lot of meh self-creators and meh passers that doesn't mesh perfectly.
Yeah, the Bulls are the weirdest team, I think, in the NBA outside the Knicks. I think them and the Knicks.
They did a good job this summer of putting vets around their young guys, but it doesn't work that well.
No, their biggest problem is you're never going to make the playoffs when Zach LaVine's your best player.
No.
Right? I mean, unless
you're going to make the playoffs with Zach LaVine as a starter.
I think he'd be your third best player, but I don't think he'll ever accept that role as part of the problem.
I am not a big Zach LaVine fan.
I
am projecting.
I understand that, to be honest. I mean, I just think
I get why he's good. He's just I don't.
He would be a great
He needs the ball to be awesome, but on a very good team, he shouldn't have the ball.
You're right. I mean, probably he's the best like off your bench six man kind of right. Just you know comes in.
Yeah, six man, perfect. Lou Williams role.
Yeah, Lou Williams role. I think that's probably the right. You're probably right. That's probably the right role for him. But I mean, yeah. I mean, they just you have to have. I mean, I think they do have some young talent. I don't get me wrong. Like I think Markkanen is a decent player. I know they.
I love Wendell. I think he's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have good young talent. I just think LaVine poisoned this team, and I think honestly they should sell high on. I mean, they probably can't even get high on him right now. Get high on him. Well,
the team that would trade for him is like the Kings or something that need some like. Yeah, we're trying.
What's his salary? Is he on a big contract? I forget now.
Some in the 20s, some close to 20s. Oh,
so he can't get like be the bench guy on any like.
He's marketable, like, so someone might want him.
No, but like
shooting on stuff.
He'd be perfect on like kind of a like a team that's on
the Magic.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a team that's close but needs a like. I feel like he would be like you put him in Houston and he would figure it out. I don't know. That's just, every player's probably that way, but right, he would fit Houston very well.
Yes, he would fit in Houston. Just shoot this. Take these. You're good at these.
Although, you know, maybe you trade Russ for him or something.
He is a good three-point shooter. Okay. Yeah, the Bulls with a superstar would be fun again. I think the Pacers win this game just because, you know, while their defense is good, their offense isn't good enough. And the Pacers D will make them have to score in transition even more. And their pace is pretty high. They're in the top half of the league. So if the Pacers can play good defense, they can win. And they have proven they can against this Bulls team. So stop LaVine basically stops their whole offense. So shut down LaVine, win the game.
Yeah, are we headed towards Jim Boylan being fired before this game or something like that? Like,
every time the train starts on the fire Boylan, like they go on a mini like win 4 of 6 kind of thing.
Okay, because I've heard a lot of bad news about him in the last couple weeks.
Yeah, no one who's a Bulls fan really likes him.
Nobody who's a basketball fan, but like understands basketball.
You remember when they had that? I forget who it was. Someone on their team hit a buzzer beater or something. They won like a close game, and they were all celebrating on the court. And Zach LaVine like dodged a high five from his coach on purpose. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do remember that.
This year, oh man.
I mean, he's just. Yeah, the funny thing is, he's kind of like Nate McMillan. Where like I said, McMillan has a past track record of actually being good, but we're like he's too old school. He couldn't succeed, but McMillan kind of adjusted and changed his way to actually succeed, where like Boylan is just like doubling down on his old school style of like coaching, of like just being a hard ass all the time.
No one's all the good parts of Boylan and none of the bad parts of Boylan.
Yeah, I think McMillan is a hard ass, but I think he has some like there's some side of him that we probably don't see that just like is just a really good like teacher or stuff like that, where Boylan is just an asshole almost, I feel like.
Yeah, no one is really a fan of his. Yeah, I think the Pacers win. I just do.
Yeah, I think they do too. I mean, I'd be surprised if they lose this game. If they lose this one again,
I don't think I'd be surprised. They have the sixth ranked defense. They're not as much of a pushover as their record would suggest, but they're not very good. So I think the Pacers win.
I think it's maybe not panic, but it's the fire starts burning again. We come on next Sunday and start, oh, they lost.
Oh, my gosh. They lost 6 of 8.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah.
Well, it wouldn't be 6 of 8 by then.
Or wait, that's 3. They've lost 7 of 10 or something.
It could be eight of 10 by next week.
It could. I don't think they'll lose all 3 this week. That would be.
No, I don't think they'll lose all 3 either. So I think over under on 1.5 wins.
Over.
I think that's definitely.
I think they win 2. I just don't know which 2. I say that every week, but whatever.
The Pacers always bounce back, right? They always.
They do.
We're on year 3 of them. Basically under McMillan, they never have these big losing streaks.
And when they do, they always, you know, turn 4 losses in a row to 4 wins in a row afterwards.
Their biggest losing streak was right after the Vic injury, and then they won 5 in a row, like, right after.
Well, remember that first year this team together, they were like, they lost 4 in a row.
Oh, pretty early in the year, actually.
And then they ran off like 7 in a row after that and didn't matter anymore. We weren't sure the team was good or not, or they were going to tank, what was going to happen. We were like, oh.
We're going to do a surprise mid-basketball season football 2 minutes for my boys.
Yeah, we should do it. That's
the best primetime Kirk we've ever had.
So, yeah, everybody out there, Tony is a Vikings fan, which I think we can all be Vikings fans in the playoffs. The Vikings are.
No one hates the Vikings, man.
No, I have a friend who's a big Vikings fan. I support, in college, I wasn't always a huge fan because I wasn't huge on everybody else winning. But after college, I'm like, you know what? Minnesota is a miserable sports town. It snows like 3 feet every other week there. You know, they could use some good. Their football team just finds the most miserable ways to lose games year after year after year.
Blair Walsh, Brett Favre throws the worst pass.
The Brett Favre picking, they would have lost the game to the Colts and the championship game anyways. But yes, they always find ways to lose the most miserable games ever. I mean, they're beating the Saints. Then they almost. Dalvin Cook almost fumbles the ball.
Oh, that scared
the touchdown, and like it's saved by the grace of God that his knee was down because he definitely didn't. Like I'm watching him. Like how did he? Like did he like try to lateral it? Like,
I tried to pull a Josh Allen.
Yeah, so he's pulling a Josh Allen where Josh Allen literally tried to throw the ball.
it was a crazy game, but primetime Kirk with his like second ever good game.
Oh, and that Thielen pass is amazing. I mean,
Thielen pass was amazing.
I mean. The thing about Kirk is he is
the Thielen throw to get a first down too that snuck it past the 2 minute warning in regulation. Low key, a very big play too.
The thing about the Vikings is that they have a really good defense. They've got a pretty good run game now with Cook, and they just need a quarterback who could make some deep throws and just be adequate. And Cousins is that. Cousins is going to be, you know, your superstar, but he can make a 50-yard deep throw when he needs to. He can, you know,
he did well enough.
He's a great
receiving threat.
Very much Alex Smith, which is perfect for the team.
He's a little better than Alex Smith, but
yeah.
I get what you're saying.
But he's that kind of quarterback, which is perfect. It's all you need for the Vikings because
your
defense can keep you in games after game after game, and all your kickers can fuck up, which I'm sure the kicker will fuck up eventually because that's what happens in Minnesota all the fucking time.
Yep. Especially Dan Bailey, who's been great, is going to miss some chip shot, and they're going to
lose. They'll be losing like 26-24 in Green Bay.
Whoa. You're giving a lot of credit to the Niners. That game's going to be 7-6.
I forgot they're not playing Green Bay. That's right. They're playing the Niners.
That game is going to be under 10-6, 10-7 or something.
Nothing crazy like that. But yes. But no, you should take, you know, you want to
play. For my boys. The only team apparently they can beat in the playoffs is the Saints, even though they lost the Saints in their Super Bowl.
And they had a really good year. And honestly, if they were in the NFC East, they probably would have been 13-3. I mean, they were in
just tough condition. They're good. It was a good first week of the playoffs, and I don't know, man. I think the Niners are the team I'd want to play out of all the teams left in the NFC.
I think it depends if it's going to snow in Baltimore. I think the snow could slow down Lamar, but they'll just pound it in Mark Ingram's stomach.
Yeah, I'm into the Ravens. I think they're real
good. No, I think the Ravens are really good as long as Lamar can move.
And I'm not into the Titans, so. No. Although they did prove me wrong. So
no, the Titans beat the worst. I mean, the Patriots were pretty bad, let's be real. But
yeah, they did not.
You know what you do in the football segment, really don't.
One weekend,
almost all 4 wildcard teams won almost, which I thought was kind of crazy.
I know. Buffalo, the Bills should have won, yeah.
Should have won, but, you know, they have Josh Allen's quarterback, so that doesn't help.
Yeah, good ending. Glad the Vikings are moving on another week so we can do a sad football 5 minutes at some point unless they win the Super Bowl.
We'll see what happens next week.
Yeah. Okay, so back to basketball. Should be a fun week. We both predicting them about 2 wins. Hoping they can get the train back and Brogdon back and keep things rolling. I got nothing else today, so you can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Pacers and Adam at Friedman5, me at T East NBA. Thank you guys for tuning in today, and we will see you tomorrow.